Ensign Sylvia Tilly is out there. And we have an hour to find her.
You kidnapped me!
I need your help.
Try not to blow us up.
You're such a warrior.
Burn us to the bridge.
There's been a complication.
We won't survive complications.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, announcing to everyone who will listen that I'm a secret agent.
Why does he say that, folks? Because this week we're here to talk about the fifth episode of the second season of Discovery, Saints of Imperfection. Oh, he's still with us, folks? That actually happened to us while we were watching Saints of Imperfection.
Do say, Cam. Do tell.
So here in Canada, we watch it on the Space Network. Sometimes Discovery goes over an hour, and, you know, the PVR picks it up, and it's no big deal. Tonight, that was not the case, and we're guessing the last 3-4 minutes.
Maybe a little bit more? Let's say where we cut off. We cut off about the 58-minute mark.
Right. Right, and as they were rescuing Culber from the mycelial network. Just going to go through the, you know, biological transporter.
The score was swelling as Culber and Stamets were kind of realizing maybe they could transfer Culber into our universe.
And May was saying goodbye to Tilly, yeah.
And then it cut off. So what we've done, folks, is try to stitch together as best we can. Cam, how many recaps do you think we've accumulatively read in the last, like, 15 minutes?
I've read 5.
Yeah. So I've done 3 or 4. I've done 4. So we've kind of figured out what's happened at the end.
We know the plot details. We don't have the nuance.
Yeah. So you and I both get very frustrated if we know for a fact that, say, there are reviewers or people with opinions on something that they have not seen the whole thing.
Oh, it drives me nuts. It makes me so annoyed that I have to do this right now.
You and I are both just like our fists are clenched. We're very frustrated. And people are probably asking, well, why don't you just kind of wait around a while, try to watch it on, say, your streaming service, Crave TV, which goes in Canada. It's not going to be available until tomorrow.
Yeah.
And as of now, it doesn't appear Star Trek Discovery is repeating tonight. I would assume that it's going to be repeating very soon. We'd literally just finished off the episode as it aired live on TV. We were probably behind, what, like 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a frustrating part. So I don't know. If we finish up this recording, I'm going to take a look at what the PVR is up to.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be recording the subsequent airing, then maybe we can try to piece together and do like an addendum to this episode somehow. It's a frustrating experience for us, but Cam, why don't we jump into what we can comment on? I think let's not bury the lead here.
I think the thing is we saw the entire story of the episode. It's more like we missed the epilogue.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's get right into it. Culber, according to all the recaps, Culber is back.
Yeah.
And so here's...
I like how he wasn't back and then they resolved it in a period of about, what, 4 seconds?
So that cliffhanger that they left us on for that last commercial break that we saw, it surprised me. It shocked me. It appeared Culber wasn't actually going to come back. There would be some sort of real goodbye, which I think we were kind of cheated out of, even as they attempted to do something last season following Culber's death.
Yeah.
And I thought there was going to be some real closure here with Stamets trying to reconcile, you know, the death of his partner, his husband. And then we come back from the commercial break and they're like, hey guys, I think we figured out what we can do to actually bring him back here.
Yeah.
And
Chekhov's biological pod.
Well, the organic transporter cocoon, as they call it.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I think Culber is a great character.
Mm-hmm.
I think his death was a very weird and strange one from a narrative perspective.
Yeah.
I think they probably regretted doing so.
I would say so.
And I don't think they actually addressed it very well from Stamets's point of view in the last parts of season one.
And I think
what they've been trying to do, and from Stamets from the beginning of season two, this has been, you know, kind of his defining kind of character arc here. I think they've been on a bit of a fix-it mission, and they're bringing him back.
There's a number of fix-it missions been going on in season two Discovery.
Yeah. So with regards to this, I feel very much like once you crack the egg, you really can't put it back in the shell here when it comes to character deaths, because I think it really reduces the stakes that exist within this universe.
I think you can in certain cases.
Okay, and you know, I actually do want to address that because Star Trek has a long history of bringing back characters from the dead, and I think they've actually, you are 100% correct.
Yeah, the thing is, like, you know, in certain fiction stories, and even in Star Trek, you know, a character can die, but there can be ambiguity to that death. There was no ambiguity to the death of Culber. They didn't have a green speck of space dust land on his corpse or anything like that. Like, no. This is retcon city.
And here's where I am going here.
Yeah.
This mycelial network, it is pretty much a magic land where the rules don't matter and anything can happen. And I find that to be a very frustrating narrative, you know, I guess, crutch that the writers have been leaning on. I do not like this, because how can I be invested in this particular storyline where, and we discussed it before with Point of Light, where, you know, Section 31 can come in at any moment and save the day. And it's kind of a frustrating thing if kind of the rules don't matter for this particular universe, though.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought this episode was something of a narrative disaster.
Yeah.
I think this might be the worst written Discovery episode.
It's up there for me. I still need to wrap my head around
a lot to check out those last 3 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And that's why I don't feel I can necessarily declare it the worst episode yet of Star Trek Discovery. I'll do my rewatch in the coming days, and maybe next week
I'll be rewatching the ending of it tomorrow. But
I find it frustrating in that as much as I loved Culber as a character, and I don't think they should have killed him off in the first place, I don't even think they really justified it from a narrative perspective in the first place. I think that, as I said, you know, you can't really put the genie back in the bottle here, which they are doing. And this frustrates me. Look, I have no doubt that there's going to be a lot of interesting, you know, character dynamics that will be playing out with Culber trying to get his identity back, Stamets trying to rebuild his relationship with his husband, and of course, one Ash Tyler kind of being in the middle of this after his Voke persona.
Another bit of a retcon as well of the finale of season one.
Yeah.
Because when they write that finale and Ash Tyler's going, you know, I'm heading off with Laurel now,
and I can never come back.
Yeah, I have trouble wrapping my head around the writers being like, well, we're going to bring him back after one more appearance onto Discovery.
Literally. But you know what? He was on the Discovery with that holographic projection, you know. So
that's true.
He's never not been on Discovery in all of his appearances.
Yeah, it's true.
Which I think maybe Point of Light was a little bit of a stumble, but I think that
I'm coming around on Point of Light in this moment.
Yeah. No, I get it.
I feel like the Klingon story in that one is, if not great, I don't think it was great in any way, shape, or form, it at least was telling a story that was fairly, you know, consistent with what it was doing throughout the episode.
Yes, yes.
It had a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I could walk away and be like, you know what, not really my cup of tea, but it told its story. This, to me, this whole episode just felt like fragments of plot ideas just being thrown at me.
I feel the same way.
It's like when you see a bad blockbuster movie. Like a Transformers movie or something like that, where you can tell there's no actual story, it's being written on the fly, and they're just throwing plot elements at you in a pile, and it's just like, well, there's your takeaway.
Didn't this episode not just feel like it was just trying to be, I guess, kind of like almost like a surgery session where you're attaching every single limb that had come loose from a body?
Yeah.
And this is kind of building up from season one, as well as the building blocks of season two as well. This just seemed like a Frankenstein of an episode.
Yeah.
And
it's like, we need to establish Section 31 better. We need to establish Pike's relationship with 31. We need to pay off the mycelial network. We need to deal with this whole Tilly speck on a shoulder thing. We need to get Ash Tyler back on the ship. We need to get Culber back on. It's like, what the hell is going on in this episode? Like, pick your plot, you know, the things you want to pay off, and do one or two of them. You don't crash, you know, them into this like a demolition derby into one episode.
But before anyone thinks that we're being unfair to this one, I think, look, go back to our reviews of New Eden, as well as a Noble for Charon, where we really, really dug those episodes. And I think what those
brother two, too,
and I think what they all had in common is they were very focused.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one story that they're trying to tell. It was I think the two that I just named were far less serialized in nature.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably the most serialized episode that we've had so far.
Yeah.
And it just does not work. This is not Discovery's strength here. And I don't know. I mean, going forward, it's going to be interesting how much the writers realize that.
Yeah.
I don't know, Cam.
And I don't think serialization is the problem. You can look at DS9 or Enterprise and look at their serialized stories. It doesn't feel like they're cutting the legs off the main narrative of the single episode.
Well, that's exactly it. And we've been saying this for a long, long time, is yeah. What DS9 and what Enterprise did is they would have an A story that was very much kind of an episode that you could pick out of a pile mm-hmm. and say, oh, this is the episode that was about so-and-so.
Even if it does connect to the larger arc, it's still a beginning, middle, and end story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there may be B-plot elements that were more of the serialized stuff, but
sure.
As you said, Cam, there's still a beginning, middle, and end within that that would connect to larger arc, where this just seems like everything, like, I'm in the middle of a food fight, and there's just stuff flying at my face, and I'm trying to catch it in my mouth as it goes, and like, what am
in
I...
In your mouth? What kind of food fight are you having?
It's like, what am I tasting in my mouth right now? It's just like a mix of, like, you know, like one of those, like, you know, fruit shakes that, you know, you have in the morning to, you know, get you going. It's just
I don't have those.
No. Okay. Fair enough. So, okay. We've kind of crapped on this episode so far with the Culper return stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to be really interested to see where this one ranks on IMDb, because I saw, you know, that Point of Light from a couple episodes ago, yeah. The Klingon one that I just mentioned a couple minutes ago, is the lowest rated Discovery episode in IMDb ratings out of any Discovery episode so far. And I don't see this one doing great, but I don't like to predict either the general audience.
Because I also wonder, do you think general audiences are just going to be happy that Culper's back and that's what's going to stick out to them?
Maybe.
You know, I mean,
they weren't excited to see Ash Tyler back?
Is anyone excited about this character? Does Ash Tyler... Look, Culper has a following.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear anybody talk about their love of Ash Tyler?
No.
Yeah.
But before we get to Ash Tyler, I just want to talk a little more about the Culber stuff in depth. Because, this is our reintroduction to this character. There should be a lot of emotion attached to this. And you talked, you know, earlier about how we never got to see a grand farewell between Stamets and Culber.
They tried.
They tried. And honestly, you know, you were saying maybe this is going to be it. At a certain point in this episode, you know, as I had the same reaction you did where his hand wouldn't go through, I thought, oh, maybe they are going to have this as the farewell. In which case, I realized to myself, this is a worse farewell than the one before.
Yeah.
Where I'm watching, you know, this poor actor just like huddled on the floor, like spasming and like acting like he's catatonic. And then he gives one like brief soliloquy of like, you know what? I have to stay behind. And it's like, that's your farewell? That better not be your farewell.
But doesn't it also feel like they're just kind of beating the same points into us that we've already kind of experienced before with their initial farewell?
Yeah.
You know, so it's...
Yeah, it doesn't add anything new. It's just like redoing the same thing, but somehow worse.
I can respect it a little more because the writers are willing to just kind of put a pin in it and say, no, definitively, you know, Culber is gone. And Stamets, from here on out, his story is about him truly moving on.
Right.
They didn't do that, Cam.
I mean... I'm of two minds, whereas, yeah, in terms of, like, screenwriting 101, this was very, very poor. And, that, you know, not just in this episode. I mean, from thinking this out from the beginning, they should have realized what their strengths were with their characters and said, you know what, let's not make this character a sacrificial lamb character just for a plot point.
Yeah.
That was a bad idea. And, you know, so I don't like the way they did this at all. I think it's incredibly clunky, and as you said, it's just magic. And retcon magic at that, like the most like bend over backwards retcon humanly possible. But at the same time, if it means in future episodes, not even like next week's episode, I mean, like when I'm watching season 4 of Discovery and Culber and Stamets are really fun together on the show, I'm not going to care about this episode.
No.
And that's kind of the way I feel. Like maybe long game, this is for the better. But in terms of the short game, in terms of examining the episode in which it happens, it's pretty bad.
I 100% agree on that. Do we want to talk about maybe other attempts in Star Trek to bring back the dead?
Sure.
Because
I was thinking of Tasha Yar.
Yes, that's the first thing that sprung to my mind.
When I'm watching, I think it was around maybe the 10th time I'd seen Culber just kind of shrinking into the floor.
With, bed bugs crawling all over him or something?
And just, kind of the embarrassing makeup job they sometimes put on people who look like they've been left on a deserted planet or something like that. You're like, oh, that's a little extreme. But I began to think to myself, I wonder if this was just too soon. Like, if they want to deal with a Culber return, I get it. Fan pressure is on them. They're coming, a few episodes off of season one, and they're like, let's fix this. But, Tasha Yar, and I know she left, Denise Crosby left that show under very different circumstances than in this case. But there was something about that breathing room and coming back in season three and coming up with a high concept, absolutely brilliant episode in Yesterday's Enterprise that allowed them to bring the character back in a way that made sense, was really cool and fun. And, they could have exploited for more story opportunities if they wanted to. Yeah, we got Seal out of it, but they could have done more if they wanted to, but it still opened that door in a really cool, inventive way. And I know that that episode was kind of a disaster in the writing period where, four people were writing it at the same time.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they didn't know if it would work.
American Thanksgiving.
They didn't know if it would work at all, and it turned out to be one of the greatest episodes of TNG. But nonetheless, it was almost like that time gave them kind of that space to really brainstorm something that was really cool, just on the face of it.
And they gave this character who is dispatched without much honor or dignity, very much like Culber.
I think Culber's was probably better than Tasha Yar's.
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
I've said 100% agree with you way more often than I ever do, Cam. You and I are, I like the fact that on this show you and I disagree often, which I think is makes for more interesting podcasting, but we're on the same page here. But, Tasha Yar comes back in Yesterday's Enterprise. She is dispatched with a certain amount of honor and dignity that she never got initially here.
Right.
And that, gave way to, say, another return with regards to Sela. Mm-hmm. So it kind of paved a path for her to have a continued presence, at least Denise Crosby, at least somebody we're familiar with here. And I agree with you. I think this is too soon. I think what the perfect thing to have done is, season premiere, we do see Wilson Cruz, in that message that's, that's one Stamets's viewing.
Right.
And then
kind of tease it out maybe through season two and really think about where you wanted to go in season three and bring it in there or something.
Yeah. I just feel like didn't audiences just kind of expect that this whole mycelial network thing was going to be an excuse to bring back Culber?
Yeah.
So if they're telegraphing it that hard,
where all the fans have figured that out long in advance of when it actually happens on the show.
Very much like the Voke twist.
Yeah.
So, I don't think Discovery, quote-unquote twists are, again, playing to the show's strength. I think, okay, so it's interesting. You sit down on the couch, we're about to watch it, and we had this conversation between ourselves, and it's something that's been lingering in my mind, but I'm still not convinced, and you aren't convinced, that Star Trek Discovery has quite figured itself out yet. And we've seen many, many signs of brilliance.
Many. There's even some in this episode that I'll get to later the nitpicking out of the way.
There are actually some genuinely good things going on in this episode.
Yeah.
I don't think Discovery's quite figured it out. And I think oftentimes I think the show thinks it's being bold by doing stuff like decapitated baby heads. Whereas I think something bold to do would have been putting a pin in the whole Culber thing, and that would have genuinely surprised me as a viewer. I would not have been expecting them to do that, because what I thought they were doing is telegraphing the exact opposite here. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, going to season three, we'll probably have to do an episode down the road where, Star Trek season threes, where that's where the series seems to kind of figure out what they're all about here.
Maybe
that's what Discovery still needs. They're still working out the kinks. I think what we're discovering more and more as the season goes on is maybe the standalone stuff that we've been able to witness works a whole lot better than this serialized cacophony that we see in an episode like this at this point.
Once again, we got the show going full season 8 Fox Mulder with Spock's shuttle that they're chasing down.
So, Cam, I was convinced this is finally be the episode where Spock appears.
I knew it wasn't going to be, because I'm just no, they're just going to show this shuttle.
Oh, my God. Cam, why the hell is Georgiou even flying this shuttle? Did they explain that? And why was she not acknowledging Discovery initially?
Yeah, and acting hostile and throwing up shields and all that sort of
thing.
Why? It's to mislead the viewer.
Yes. That is not good writing.
No.
You know, this is okay. What it is, though, it's cheap writing. It feels like the writing that we'd see in a bygone era of television.
Season 8 X-Files.
Yeah. So, okay, this is a frustrating episode. And I think the reason you and I are both frustrated, though, is because we're actually genuinely invested in Discovery. We like the series.
Yeah.
We see so many signs of so much more potential here.
I was honestly convinced they had their S figured out after the second episode, New Eden. I'm like, got it. They know what they are doing this season. And that's not a feeling I had through a lot of season one Discovery. I was like, oh, this Klingon War stuff is just not adding up the way it should. Whereas coming off those first two episodes, I just felt like, okay, they've got it. Like, they know what they're doing. They figured out the flaws. And then it's just kind of like, oh, now they're kind of ricocheting all over the place. You know, like last week, I thought that episode was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, hopefully this is, you know, we had that bump of Point of Light. You know, hey, I'll give them a little bit of a pass on that one in that they want to do this Klingon Laurel story, kind of a side story. Sometimes side episodes aren't great. We've seen that throughout. I think of like the episode Prodigal Daughter. That just popped into my head from season 7 DS9, Dax episode. Kind of an Ezri character building episode. It's a real dud. But it's kind of like they want to have that episode there to kind of build the character's backstory. Fine, I get it. So they want to establish where Laurel is. Fine. Was it great? No, but whatever. But this episode falls right into the main storytelling of everything they've been doing with all this mycelial network stuff and the Section 31 buildup. Like, this is the main thrust of the show. This isn't a side plot. This is the main thrust of the season in this episode, these various plot threads. And, I mean, I don't think a single one of them is done elegantly. And I think a big part of the problem is that Discovery, as Alex Kurtzman has said, is a bullet. I mean, this show just raced through things. And I think you can race through a lot of plot elements if the complications of them are very small and there's a very clear beginning and an end to where you're going. Whereas, like, it didn't feel that way. Like, this isn't the end of this episode. Like, it's just leading into the next episode anyway.
I think you can speed through plot points. Can you do that with character points, character beats, you know,
and that's what it's doing. All the emotion of this episode is gone. You look at how much emotion last week's episode has, where it took like, I don't know, 10 minutes on Saru's deathbed, it felt like, or, you know, five minutes to just literally have Burnham and Saru talk to each other about their relationship and their feelings for one another. And look at the space that like Anthony Rapp and Wilson Cruz were given to have this reconnection of their characters in this episode.
It's so bizarre.
It's like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like, really, it just doesn't work.
But then again, it's because the writers have the benefit of knowing that they're going to bring back Culber and address a lot of the stuff going forward. But the thing is, as you said, Cam, it does not work in the short game.
Yeah.
And I think this is like an issue we are finding more and more with the Discovery writing crews. They are asking too much of the audience. Not because, you know, the audience isn't sophisticated, but it's because the writers have the benefit of knowing what is coming in the future.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make for a week-to-week viewing experience that is really kind of acceptable or free of criticism. I think this is going to play very differently when we binge watch season 2.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
But I do think it is interesting when you look at the IMDb ratings. It's the episodes like Brother and New Eden have been getting really like strong recognition from viewers. So it shows that like some of these more solo stories are what people are really latching onto.
No, not the Star Wars
they definitely didn't latch onto that one.
And one thing that should be noted as we're going through all these recaps, so I believe, was it the AV Club or maybe the Vulture recap that we both read? It said that this would be the last one from the previous showrunners, Aaron Harberts and Christian Berg.
I think that was Vulture. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I do wonder what is in store for the series with Alex Kurtzman officially taking the reign as showrunner. We also know that there's another CBS perennial showrunner that did come in midway through season 2 as well. So
the more showrunners, the better.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, and I think one of our big concerns about season 1 is just how many cooks in the kitchen are there going forward. And, okay. Do we have all of our Culber stuff kind of out of the way at this point?
I think we're done with Culber, although we maybe want to seg into the mycelial network payoff because that is, I guess, the solo story
Before we do that, can we just briefly, like, okay, beyond the Tasha Yar thing.
Yeah.
I want to go back to that because you had brought up kind of
characters brought back.
The rules of the game here.
Yeah.
I think with the return of Spock, they set up the rules of it with the Genesis Planet.
Sure.
With
And that was a retcon, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It was set up.
Yes.
And if we look at the Jadzia turn to Ezri thing, it totally makes sense within the context that we know it. If we look at the weaker ones, though, let's say Kes. That did not necessarily work either. And again, Fury, it was kind of like almost like of a magic trick that was ensuing. So you can kind of pick up on the threads about the bringing the characters back from the dead, that the ones that work and the ones that do not work.
I always think of that Simpsons clip with the bad ones. And it's one of those old Simpsons clips. I don't even know if people remember it that well, but like they're watching like a soap opera. And it's like this couple like making out, and then this like priest comes in the door, and they're like, "Father McGrath, we thought you were dead." And he's like, "I was." And it's this weird clip that is stuck in my head ever since I saw that episode. I still laugh about it. Yeah. But like that is what I think about with the bad ones. It's like, "You were dead. I was."
But that's just, it's kind of the soap opera thing where it's just anything can happen. Who knows why? Is it being done because it's shocking or because it's earned?
Yeah. In this case, it was more, I think, I mean, there was a lot of, I think, pressure put on them over the Culber death. And so they were like, we have to bring this character back.
And yet, it does not feel earned to me.
Yeah.
Not at all. Look, I'm curious what the fallout is going to be, both from the fan perspective and also just narratively. I'm genuinely curious what the relationship is going to be like between Stamets and Culber going forward, as well as giving Ash Tyler something interesting to do.
I'm not exactly looking forward to, and I hopefully, you know, we'll see how well they deal with it, but like a couple episodes of like Wilson Cruz having to, you know, deal with the trauma of being in the Spore Network.
I know.
That sort of thing is always like, kind of a bummer to watch.
Like, yeah, it's one of those like kind of obligatory things that you have to go through.
Yeah, especially in modern TV.
But it does it make for good television?
No.
No, it doesn't.
No. It's not particularly fun to watch.
Okay, like I'm not saying that this is what they should do, but maybe they should do this. But like, I don't know, pat Culber on the back, send him off to that same hospital that Spock was at, and he'll come back in about three episodes feeling all dandy.
No, in Discovery, it's one episode.
Yeah, no kidding, or half an episode. and then we'll get an appearance of number one in between.
Yeah.
Because how many times has the Enterprise met up with Discovery so far this season? They just keep bumping shoulders at this
kidding.
Point. Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned maybe the idea of kind of the wrap up to this mycelial network. Another thing that we found out during the recap is like the window to the mycelial network is now permanently closed.
Well,
is it?
Tilly, you know, did say to May that maybe one day we'll find a way to be reunited or something. Which, where did that friendship come from?
Didn't they hate each other about one episode ago?
Yes.
So, there you go.
Again, when I was watching all this stuff in the Spore Network, which I thought was really visually gaudy to look at, there's something about the design of it. It looks fine in quick moments, but when you spend a lot of time there, it's not particularly pleasant.
I was actually okay with
it. Were you
okay? Because it looked different and didn't look like something I'd seen in Star Trek before. I think actually in the season one depiction of it, especially you'd say moments, and it's not the same as the network, but when we were in, you know, Stamets' farm, I thought Stamets' farm did not look very good.
No.
But I would say this actually looked better. It was interesting. It was different than what we typically see in Star Trek.
I guess, though, but when I think of C.V. Packham Parabellum, an episode that I feel like I've shouted out to so many times on this podcast, an insane number, but when they go to
Which was written by Kristen Beyer,
same writer as this one.
Who also wrote this one,
Yeah. That planet, you know, it definitely has CG elements added to it, but it is a physical place. Whereas when I'm looking at the Spore Network, I'm just looking at characters wander around in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
And to me, it doesn't look particularly good.
But to me, I think that's what that was the intention. It's like, this is not a you are here tactile sort of, you know, space or a universe to occupy.
There's like flying toasters in the background.
Obviously. Yes.
Yeah. So this story in a normal Star Trek episode, in a, you know, pre-Discovery episode, would have been the focus of that episode. Like, it would have been them in this alien environment, mm-hmm. establishing this relationship with this Spore character and how they come to some sort of solution to the problem. That would have been the focus of the episode. It would have been the emotion between the Tilly character and May and the bonds they build. Whereas that stuff is so rushed through. We went from May just tormenting Tilly for like two episodes or whatever to this episode where it's like suddenly they're lifelong friends making pinky swears after May talks her down after about like what 30 seconds of Tilly being like angry about and freaked out by being brought to the mycelial network.
Yeah.
Like that's not satisfying. Look how long it took Picard to sit down with Captain, I'm forgetting his name, in Darmok.
Yes, I know who you're
talking about. Yeah, the Paul Winfield character. Yeah. Like, it took a while for those two characters to sit down and actually begin to build bonds. Whereas in this, it's just like, it starts with characters yelling at each other, and then a quick, like, we need your help. Okay, I guess that is Starfleet's mission. That isn't satisfying. It's more like, I have to do this by duty. It's not because I actually want to reach out and help you.
Just flashback to Darmok. What was the captain's name? It had the word like Ath in it, like A-T-H, I think, somewhere.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's possible, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But again, this friendship that you're referring to, it doesn't, again, feel earned. That's another problem we're having consistently with this episode. Is like there's a lot of these emotional moments that just do not feel earned. They feel as if they're coming out of the middle of nowhere, and it's frustrating.
And I also find the May character to be a real problem. And that it's one of my least favorite tropes, and this is an entirely personal thing for me.
Okay.
But I see this in a lot of horror and sci-fi movies where some sort of alien intelligence or extraterrestrial intelligence or supernatural intelligence takes the form of like a human. Usually it's a child in most cases, but it's a character who becomes very like petulant and acts in ways that are just there to create chaos, essentially.
Kim, we literally saw this episode on TNG. It was called Imaginary Friend.
Yeah, perfect example. I've kind of wiped that one from my mind, actually.
It's a really bad episode.
Yeah.
And so going back to this, I just don't think it's a trope in cinema or TV that works at all. And I don't know why people keep going back to it.
I would have preferred, if you want to have this May character who's like a human construct visually, have it something more along the lines of the movie Contact, where it's like a higher intelligence that's trying to communicate with Tilly, but is doing it in ways that it's struggling. Like, it doesn't quite grasp human psychology. Whereas, like, everything May's doing here is just annoying, like grabbing guns and pointing them at things. And it's like,
because we kind of know how it's going to end.
Yeah. Right? And it's just like, this character is just here to be a wild card in all these situations.
Could you imagine May actually pulls a trigger and Culber dies? Did anyone in the audience think that was a possibility?
No,
because this is really bad writing.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, if nobody actually believes what the stakes are, then you just kind of wait for the inevitable to unfold. Like, okay, Cam, I know I didn't want to like pass judgment on this episode, but the more I talk about it, the more I think it through, the more I really, really don't like everything about, well, not everything, but
there's good stuff we're going to get to.
Eventually, I swear to God, we'll talk about some good stuff at some point here. But
yeah, like to me, this May character, I don't blame the actress, Bahia Watson. You know, she's doing the material she's given, but it's like you're playing a character that I would be fascinated to know the motivations they're giving this character. Yeah. Like explaining to her, what is your motivation in this scene? You know, it's like, it seems to bounce around in episode to episode.
And don't you think this just takes so much agency away from Tilly? Like, we spent like four episodes with so much of Tilly just kind of like not being herself, not having her wits about her, and just kind of being haunted by this being.
Yeah. Or being completely taken over by it.
That was actually more of the interesting...
In like Exorcist moments.
I know. I actually found that more of kind of the interesting stuff that they did with this. But otherwise, I just don't think this four-episode arc with May worked at all.
I think there's fun moments in between. Like, I think, you know, Mary Wiseman had some really great acting moments.
Yeah.
You know, the scenes where she was having these communications, these dialogues with the May character, I thought were really well done in cases. I thought she was fun in this episode where, you know, she's grabbing the gun and explaining why it's a level 3, you know, phaser rifle. It's stuff like that. You know, the actress is having fun and really selling this comedic dialogue, but in terms of the emotional pull of this story, it's just dead on arrival.
Yeah. Okay. Again, we'll get to the stuff that we liked, I swear. Yeah. Can we talk about Section 31 stuff?
Which, sadly, was probably better than a lot of the other stuff in this episode.
Yes,
it was. And I'm not a big fan of the Section 31.
No, nor am I. And, okay, so, again, I was alluding to it at the start, but apparently everybody knows in the 23rd century exactly what Section 31 is. Ash Tyler is literally walking around with an effing blank badge on his chest.
That has special communicator powers.
Yes, and guess what? You flash forward to Ben Sisko, one of the most distinguished captains in all of Starfleet, 100 years from now, he's like, Section 30 what?
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, we'll keep our eye on this. And yeah. like, it seems as if they've entirely retconned what this organization was. And look, I realize there's like a 120-year difference.
And there's
here.
This is where it gets very frustrating, because they keep saying, no, no, don't worry. All the canon elements are going to pay off on Discovery. And so you kind of go like, well, they don't at the moment, but I guess at some point the writers are going to come up with some I'm beginning to wonder if it'll be a harebrained scheme to explain why Section 31 is a complete mystery in the future.
And yet there's like talk of a spinoff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, in the moment, in this specific moment of watching these episodes, it's really goofy.
You and I were laughing. We were literally laughing at a lot of the stuff that unfolded.
And I groaned out loud when Section 31 showed up to save the day with its tractor beam. When Discovery was being pulled into the mycelial network.
In a holographic meteor.
Yeah, I was just like, this is what I feared. This is what I said, I think, on probably in Point of Light.
Yeah, it was Point of Light.
Yeah,
I remember you pointing this out.
Yeah, I said I was really concerned they were going to turn to this Deus Ex Machina who just shows up to save the day at key moments, because they have knowledge and abilities far beyond what the characters on our show, who should be driving the show, possess.
Yeah, so what it did lead, though, is I guess Ash Tyler is back as an ongoing liaison.
Fan fave.
Fan favorite Ash Tyler. Look, I would have loved it had, the finale of season one, that was kind of his, sign-off from the series. I think that actually kind of wrapped everything up quite well. I knew it at the time that it was not going to be, because I think there was more story left to tell with Laurel, and he was going to be part of that. But the thing is, they wrapped that up in one episode, and so I was like, okay, is this just an excuse to integrate him back into the crew? Which I thought would have been completely impossible, considering that the Volk persona murdered Culber. But now that Culber's back, I think this is just
guilt-free.
Exactly. This is just like another kind of like
retcon.
Sort of retcon. This is why I'm getting so frustrated thinking more and more about this episode here. Look, you and I actually thought that Ash Tyler finally became an interesting character after the Volk reveal. Like, leading up to that, we just kept shrugging our shoulders. We kind of laugh at like how his most defining characteristic was the fact that he likes to go trout fishing.
Yeah.
You know? So I have hope that they can do more interesting things with Ash Tyler. But guess what? I thought they were going to be doing more interesting things with him based on Kronos. Like, this, what a conflicted position he's in. Like, I've actually found that to be a very fascinating thing to set him up for, where he's on his home planet, but he's rejected from that society. He can't go back to Starfleet. He's completely rejected over there. Yeah. What is this conflicted man to do? They write him off out of that in one episode.
Yeah.
And they plant him right back on the USS Discovery.
You say one episode, but it's about, what, 20 minutes of screen time?
I know. Yeah. So, look, I don't know. I just feel as if we're going to be hitting a lot of Ash Tyler beats that we as the audience kind of expect. And I think will feel very obligatory from a writing perspective, which I go back to the Culber stuff. Like, how fun is this going to be to watch as a viewer? Like, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I just don't know what the long-term game for Ash Tyler is going to be.
What's he
going
to be doing in, say, season three?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know.
Well, exactly. I mean, the writers have said there's going to be definite room for George O in season three, so that makes me go, Section 31's a presence in season three, probably, and Ash Tyler could be around for that if he's still with them.
So he, like, shows up, like, every three episodes?
In an asteroid that's cloaked. He's like, it's me again!
Oh, that was so silly. That was so silly.
I can give that a pass. It's just more the plot construct that was built around it for it to happen.
Well, let's talk about some of the silly stuff that made us laugh.
Giorgio
doing a snake hiss.
And then he said, go back to your snake pit. She's a big Slash fan.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was really on the nose where she had the top hat.
Well, no, okay, you just talk about on the nose. She does the snake hiss, and she's eating an effing apple.
Yeah. Oh, like, that's right. I didn't even think of that. Then she spoke in parcel tongue.
Yes. I'm like, oh, guys.
I'll say this. I have two characters who are my MVPs of this episode.
Okay.
She's one of them.
Okay.
Because Michelle Yeoh, she's playing an absurd character, and she is loving it. Like, Michelle Yeoh is having, I feel like, way more fun on this show than a lot of the cast members are, especially in episodes like this.
I agree. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Emperor Giorgio as a character.
Yeah.
I'm loving Michelle Yeoh, though.
She was life in this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Like, I just wish we could have gotten like a captain, a Prime Universe Captain Giorgio short track or something like that. I really think
although
that
she wouldn't have walked around eating apples and making hissing noises.
No, that's true.
Although apparently she did drink people into the table a lot.
I love the fact that there is that Pike and Giorgio connection from the Academy. It's kind of. Do you think it's weird that they've not encountered each other since the Academy? I mean, it's a big Starfleet, so who knows?
Except for in the novel Desperate Hours, okay. Which I think they've retconned already.
It sounds like it, just based on what you've told me.
Yeah, I think that book is now out the window.
This is why I don't read any of these novels. It's like, I've probably read maybe a dozen Star Trek novels over the years. That's enough for me. I just, how invested can I be when, everything can be thrown out the window at any given moment?
Right.
Yeah. Look, guess what, guys? I can write Star Trek fanfic that is, as kind of, continuity-driven within the series as anything else you're going to read out there that's official.
I guess I'm not going to get payoff to that number one Saru romance.
Maybe you will, Cam.
Maybe.
Just a short digression here. After the big Saru moment last episode, we got pretty much zero follow-up with Saru this week.
And here's the thing. If this was a different Star Trek series, I wouldn't really mind, because those ones would focus, depending on the episode, from character to character, like TNG or DS9. But in a case like this, where they are all about being serialized, it's very weird to just drop that character with nothing.
I know.
Except tech dialogue in this one.
Yeah. So, Section 31 stuff. I guess Leland, he says he's now in charge of all of Section 31?
I guess.
But remember the previous appearance of his, he said that he's hearing back from Control. It's like, Control says we need to recruit Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
But now he's telling Pike that he's in charge of Section 31?
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, the rules of the game keep changing. I don't really know what to follow here. Are you interested in Leland at all as a character?
Not yet.
Not yet.
He hasn't given me anything to be interested in.
He's got a cool look.
Sure, but I feel like when William Sadler showed up in Deep Space Nine, I feel like that character was instantly interesting.
Yeah.
Leland has not reached that because he doesn't have episodes that are as well written as the DS9 Section 31 episodes.
And I think, I think Extreme Measures was the weakest of the Season 7 wrap-up arc for DS9.
Which is at which episode? The one where they go inside
Sloane's brain.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with Sloane himself, you're actually given a lot of interesting layers with this character after his third appearance.
Yeah.
This is, if you include the deleted scene from the season one finale, this is Leland's third appearance again. I'm getting nothing from him.
Leland isn't a character.
No.
He just shows up
exposition
and
ball.
Gives some exposition and maybe has a sly line here or there, but he's not a character. He's not anyone we care about.
They do establish that Pike also has a history with him, and Leland is fine threatening Pike.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have yet to invest in what this character is. He just kind of seems like generic villainous dude at this point.
Well, he's being presented mostly as a polar opposite of Pike.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of the season is going to be like the clash between Section 31 sensibilities and Starfleet ideals, which is, I mean.
Okay, so you brought up Slash. Now you're bringing up the clash. Yeah. It's a rock heavy episode, Cam.
Yeah. Who's the character singing London Calling?
Oh, okay. There's a good one. And I think the obvious is one Anson Mount, Pike. I don't think it's him. Who is the most punk amongst our characters?
Tilly?
Tilly? No, it's not Tilly. Not in my brain. I think it's Stamets. I think Stamets is the most punk. I can picture Stamets grabbing the mic and doing London Calling. I can. We don't have any Brits. Well, you know what? Shahzad Latif is the only Brit.
Yeah.
Can you picture Shahzad Latif rocking out?
Latif, yes.
Yeah.
Ash Tyler, no.
Exactly. Yeah. He's no Joe Strummer.
No, definitely not.
Okay. So, any Section 31 thoughts before we maybe try to talk about some stuff that we like?
Well, the thing is, this whole Spock storyline has become so tortured and convoluted. But I guess if you're going to have Section 31, at least write them into that story. Like, I want them to actually contribute something to that story. Like, when all is said and done and we're looking back on season 15, or when we're looking back on...
You're really very hopeful.
When we're looking back at season 2 of Discovery from episode 15. I want to be able to look back and be like, boy, that episode 5, Saints of Imperfection, was really building the blocks for the genius that would to come. And like, you know, that Section 31 was on a very specific thematic, maybe, track over the season in terms of how that would tie into the Spock story. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't have a lot of confidence based on this episode, but I am hoping that's what will be the case. And if this show could please have some sort of insight into Section 31 that is interesting and I'm on board. Like, I'm not going to rule out Section 31 just because I think it's a questionable decision to bring them in, but just have something to say that doesn't feel like a reiteration of Deep Space Nine or even Into Darkness.
It doesn't even feel like a reiteration of Into Darkness, DS9, or even Enterprise. It just feels like pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
Like nothing beyond that. It hasn't actually raised any of these questions that we thought could be concerning for the series. And it's incredibly boring at this part. It's more like, here is our excuse to watch Starfleet officers kill people.
I think you can get away with a lot, too, if you have the Section 31 characters all have huge charisma. And Emperor Georgiou does. Like, Michelle Yeoh is definitely giving the swaggering kind of really fun line deliveries. And, like, they're giving her scenery to chew. Whereas, like, Leland and Ash Tyler are very, they're not the most, you know, charisma bomb characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're kind of like, do I really care about them that much? I think it's more interesting if you bring in these sort of antagonist force who are kind of your anti-Starfleet, but all of them are really fun and interesting. And so you get at least more of the sense of like why you want to care about these characters being brought into your main plot. That can go a long way. That can help mend some of the bumps in like a trajectory of a show that's a little bumpy. If you really are at least really fascinated by the characters. But I feel like Georgiou is the only one that I think is at least she can be fun. Whereas the other two are just kind of blanks. Like, Ash Tyler is a character who's not, at least in season two, is not paying off what I really hoped this character would pay off at the end of season one.
Right. He should have been left on Kronos, or as he now calls it, Kronosh?
Yeah, his pronunciation was very different. Has that been said? Has it been done that way in Discovery at all?
I've never heard it pronounced as Kronosh, as far as I know, but you know, we could have been watching Point of Light and the Klingons could have been speaking, you know, in Klingonese.
Sure.
And they said it that way and I just did not notice.
Yeah.
But it goes back to how they've now kind of turned Kales into Kalesh.
Right.
I don't know. To me, it's very strange because remember, like, just mere seconds before he said Kronosh, we had Burnham call it Kronos.
Yeah.
So it's just that, like, kind of the human sort of affectation that they put on it. I don't know.
Right.
Like, I want to track down Ron Moore and ask him how he thinks it should be pronounced.
I just wonder if for the Klingon actors with the actual dental prosthetics, it's difficult to say Kronos.
Yeah.
I wonder if that could be part of it.
I think that could be very much a possibility. Yeah. And so then when you take the prosthetics out, the actor wants to keep the consistency with how it's said.
So it doesn't sound like it's a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
It's intentional, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, look, maybe Georgiou should have been the liaison then. So what we do find here, I'll say this about the episode. They are tying together all the disparate elements that we've been witnessing so far in the season all into one episode. Mm-hmm. You and I don't think it works at all, but at least they are trying to do that, and maybe they can go have more of a laser focus going forward. I don't know how involved Georgiou is going to be moving forward.
Yeah.
I suspect we'll see her and Leland some more.
I thought the Georgiou Burnham stuff was actually really fun when they're saying goodbye and they're almost coming to blows. Like, I really have to question Burnham at this point, whether she's thinking, why the hell did I ever drag this character back from the mirror universe? Like,
why should there be
serious ramifications for that character for doing this.
Why did she?
I don't guilt.
Exactly.
Guilt, I guess. But
is it? I don't know.
Do you think the character is really thinking about how wrong she was to do this?
No, I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think she's just thinking, like, this is an evil woman from another universe.
Yeah.
Why is she in this universe, Burnham?
Yeah. But I did think these two actresses had, like, chemistry, and they're fun to watch bounce off each other. And we saw that in season one where, like, Georgiou could be fun when she was, you know, going under the guise of Prime Georgiou, and Tilly and Burnham were all reacting to her, and Saru, and, like, that became fun. So if you can keep that dynamic a little bit alive here, I think you can get some sparks out of it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so some elements that I do like. The more I see of Pike...
He was fantastic.
Yeah, the more I like.
Yeah.
I'm a Pike-liker. A Pliker, as I've said before.
I have noticed, actually, in the last couple of podcast episodes, you and I have at some point, between the two of us, referred to Spock as Spike. And I'm beginning to wonder if we're so in love with Pike, we've just reverted Spock's name to Spike.
Are you sure I've called him Spike?
You did once. I did it once.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. In different episodes, though.
You're 100% correct. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I think in the last episode, you called him Spike.
I did, yeah.
And I think maybe the episode one, I called him Spike.
Yeah. We're swooning over Pike so much that's going through our brain.
Totally.
But Anson Mount, I was having a conversation with my sister who's been on the podcast before, and we were debating, is Anson Mount too good as Pike? Like, is he giving, like, a movie star performance that's overshadowing the actors?
Okay, so is it a movie star performance so much as, like, they are writing this as a character that's a little too perfect, though, where, you know, they want him to be a polar opposite to Lorca, so we're not seeing so much the bad side of him. Although, sure. Look, I mean, he was quick to want to fire on that giant alien last week. He seemed, you know, a little bit trigger happy maybe in this episode too. But I think to a certain degree that the writers are making him look very, very good.
Yeah.
Whereas Burnham has had her bad moments. Tyler's had his bad moments, you know, and so on and so forth here.
And just in terms of like star wattage, Anson Mount feels like a rock star on this show.
Like a leading man.
He does.
Yeah.
In a big way where I was, when we were doing our feverish, you know, reading of recaps of this episode, there was, I can't remember which one it was, but they were saying, Pike is beginning to steal this show. Like, mm-hmm. We are beginning to wish this show was about him. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a good thing for Discovery.
I'll say this. So, one of my favorite I'd say probably my favorite moment, and it's a very small moment, but right before Michael went to go meet Ash,
yeah,
Pike and Burnham talked.
I love that moment.
And he was like, what is going on here? I don't know you that well, but I know enough to know that something's going on. She says, please, just bear with me. And he looks at her and says, done. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a moment that you need with these kinds of commanders to show the trust. The other thing that Pike said is, like, I don't know Tilly that well,
yeah,
but I know that she would be willing to sacrifice or risk her own life for that of her crew. I like the fact that they are acknowledging that, like, Pike is still kind of the new guy around, but he has this very, very strong trust with fellow Starfleet officers.
Yeah.
So, Cam, if this Captain Pike spinoff does not come to fruition, but we get a Section 31 spinoff instead, yeah, I'm going to be so pissed off here.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, Pike is almost becoming my favorite character on this show, yeah, which is kind of a...
Well, it's because you're a white male, Cam.
Oh, boy. Awkward.
Well, I don't know. And, yeah, like, and that's kind of the thing. Like, how many more white male leads, sure, do we need in Star Trek? We've had a whole lot.
Yeah.
But if you're getting such a charisma bomb,
yeah,
around us, like...
To be fair, I wouldn't have said Lorca was my favorite character in season one.
You know, and I agree with that,
yeah,
at this point. So, okay. So we're both officially Pikers?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just loved even, like, you know, his kind of speech to the crew when they're going to go into that, into the mycelial network. Like, we've seen a lot of characters play Star Trek captains on Star Trek shows, and I just feel like Anson Mount gets it.
Yeah.
In a big, bad way. Like, we watched, you know, Scott Bakula is a hugely accomplished actor, and you could see he struggled to figure out Archer over, you know, a couple seasons of Enterprise.
Again, season three is maybe where, yeah, he kind of came into it.
He gets it. Yeah. He gets it, and he's great. But Anson Mount seemed to have figured it out right out of the gate, and I think that's just really impressive.
I don't recall if we brought it up on the podcast yet, but there was a joke going around last summer when you jokingly told one of our good friends,
yeah, okay,
and one of our podcast previous podcast guests, one Jesse Okendo, you tell the story.
Okay,
here,
yes,
Cam.
So we have a group where we talk with all our friends from the Vegas convention.
It's on WhatsApp.
Yeah, on WhatsApp. Yeah. And a lot of us were sharing photo ops for various Discovery cast members because they were all coming for their first year ever. Their, you know, photo op prices were quite pricey, so we were splitting with each other and setting that up. And I made a joke. At that point, Anson Mount was coming to the convention, and we'd never seen a single frame of Pike.
No.
And I don't know anything about Anson Mount.
Not even a publicity photo.
Yeah, no offense to the actor. I'd never seen, I don't think, anything he'd been in, really. I knew the Marvel Inhumans show had been on the air. That, yeah, was about the gist of my knowledge of him, and maybe the Britney Spears movie. I was aware that he was in that. But I kind of made a joke in our WhatsApp group about, so who wants to split an Ensign Mount with me? And the Ensign Mount photos, I think they were like $90 or something. Yeah. Like they were quite pricey.
Yeah.
And yes, our good friend Jesse Okendo, who's been on the podcast before and hopefully will be again soon, just messaged me back. He's like, I bought the photo op. And he's like, so you're good? And Jesse and I went and did that photo op, and it was a really great photo, actually.
It's amazing. It came out good. Can you post a picture of it on the blog?
I will post it in the blog, yeah, this week. But, you know, the photo was great, and he was could not have been nicer.
Yeah.
Like, he was just so nice to meet, and he really actually wowed us at the panel, even before the photo op.
Yeah.
Like, he came out. No one knows anything about him. They've not seen any footage, and he really blew everyone away, and we were like, huh, this guy might be pretty good. And did the photo. So nice. The photo came out great. And now I'm so glad I did that photo. I couldn't be happier.
Well, I was saying in this WhatsApp group as well, like, I don't know how much I'm going to have to pay this summer to get this photo op, but it's not going to be the price that you and Jesse got.
I think it might be the same.
Might be? Okay. Because the thing is, like, now I have to get Anson Mount photo at this point because he's just really blowing me away as his character. You got in on it early. You are, like, officially kind of the cool guy ahead of the curve.
Sure.
I'm loving it, though. Cam, any final thoughts on this before we talk about some of the Star Trek news that's been going on?
Well, I guess just the one thing is I wanted to touch on with the Spore Network, just to go back there for a second. What did you think of the central kind of sci-fi concept of this, is that Culber is the monster in the network? Like, was that interesting to you?
I kind of suspected that's where we were going.
Yeah.
You know, I wish this episode surprised me more. And all of the, you know, revelations that we had here, none of it really surprised me at all.
I feel like monster was the wrong word.
Yeah.
I think it would have said if they'd said, like, there's a disease
a virus
or something. Like, he is essentially infecting them by protecting himself. I think that's a more interesting tact to take.
And
there's
also
an infection in the network, something like that.
There's an interesting kernel of an idea here.
Mm-hmm.
They just did not execute it very well.
Yeah. Done too quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cam, Star Trek news. Sinequa Martin Green may have slipped the official name of the new Picard spinoff.
Yeah.
Called simply Picard.
Yeah.
What do you think of this versus, say, I don't know, Star Trek Destinies, which has been
rumored. Was terrible. Yeah.
I didn't like that. Or Star Trek Jean-Luc Picard. Like, I think that the idea of excising Star Trek and simply calling it Picard is a dream for the marketing team behind this. They can, like, it spells out exactly who the main character is, what this series is about. It's an iconic name at this point. It's going to grab these Main Street audiences.
Main Street?
For all those
in Disneyland.
Well, I was thinking actually my own neighborhood.
Right.
For those that aren't familiar, and I guess I'm going to expose myself to the whole world, though, but I do live on Main Street here in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah.
Anyway, these mainstream audiences, which I think they're very much trying to grab hold of, which I think we'll discuss in just a few moments as well, I think this is genius. I think this is what the ideal name is for the Picard spinoff.
Yeah, I did float the idea that I wondered if it would be called maybe Picard, but they would work in the insignia into the logo to make it very clear it's a Star Trek show, but just stick with the name Picard.
Oh, it's perfect marketing.
Yeah. No, I'm down for that. It makes sense. And that is kind of a trend that I think we're seeing, you know, a little more of characters like a single name. We saw Logan. The new Die Hard 6 is going to be called McLean. I think we may see more of this. You know, it tends to take one success to start a trend.
And Glass.
Glass, yeah. Logan was a big hit. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of this.
I keep going back to the best example ever. The follow-up to Fast and the Furious, remember number 4 was called Fast and Furious?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just what it is.
Yeah,
getting rid of all the fat that you don't need there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Look, I think this is I love it. It's not the first Star Trek series to drop Star Trek from its name.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I don't think this is sacrilege whatsoever. I just think it makes the most sense to get the most eyeballs on this. And that's all we really want, is for more people to be watching Star Trek and guaranteeing us more Star Trek content moving forward. So I like this.
I'm really fascinated just coming off of this episode of Discovery of, like, what this Picard show is going to feel like just to watch. Because I just have a lot of trouble imagining the Kurtzman Factory putting out a Picard show that feels just kind of maybe tone-wise or pacing-wise, like not necessarily TNG, but even like the TNG movies or something.
Kurtzman has been upfront about the fact that this will
have
it will
be contemplative.
a very kind of different sort of pacing and tone, which I think is the right thing to say. I think Stewart has said as much as well.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm very hopeful. I just think about Calypso, the short trek that was written by one Michael Chabon, who is one of the big brains in the writer's room behind this Picard spinoff.
Along with Akiva Goldsman.
And Christian Beyer, the writer of this episode.
Yeah.
At least there, I think that there is a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And so I'm very intrigued. And the fact that Stewart looked at their treatment and was intrigued enough that this is what he thinks is needed to bring the character back. And I believe him 100% when he said he had zero interest in bringing back Picard.
Yeah.
I think it has to take something special to do this. And I'm dollar signs, right?
Stuart Baird said the same thing.
Sure. So, look, I think it's good Picard news so far.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the other Star Trek news. The animated series, not Lower Decks, but the one geared towards children, still untitled. It doesn't appear as if it will be going on CBS All Access, but instead it looks as if they'll have some sort of deal struck with Nickelodeon down in the United States. Big network. I grew up down in the U.S. It was a big part of my childhood. I think this is genius.
Yeah.
What kid is going to, you know, discover Star Trek through CBS All Access?
Yeah, like, none. Getting,
exactly. And this is a long play on the part of CBS. They want to build fans from a young age because, Cam, we've brought it up many a time on the podcast before. You go to those Star Trek conventions, you and I, we're not any sort of spring chicken by anyone's definition, but we are among the youngest contingent there.
Right.
So I think you need to get young viewers into it. You have to do it through what is probably the biggest medium available right now, which is Nickelodeon. I think this is great. I don't know what it means for, say, Canadian viewers like us, but yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I'll be watching every single episode.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So,
me too.
Going forward, I just think this makes so much business sense. This is not a play to get, you know, these kids to start watching CBS All Access within like a year or two. This is down the road for like 10 years. This is how far they're looking ahead with the content. And that's why I don't think it's super surprising that we're getting all these rumors about like a Giorgio spinoff, or how you and I are speculating quite a bit about a Pike spinoff. I almost called him Spike.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, by the way. So, look, I don't. What are your thoughts on this?
I think, yeah, I've said this from way back when they were talking about the animated show in the past. Like, they need to latch on to kids, get them watching Star Trek and brought into this universe because, you know, kids don't know what Star Trek is at this point.
Yeah.
And I mean, yes, there are some parents out there, you know, showing their kids Star Trek. The majority aren't.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Star Trek is going to need a lot of eyeballs in the future because the amounts of demographics of fans that like show up at actually these events and, you know, the conventions and all that stuff and really feed the Star Trek machine that keeps it going, that's the minority of people that watch Star Trek. And so you've got to build that audience back up so that you can have those people that keep that fan culture going with Star Trek. So I think it's a great thing to try to do. I hope they succeed. It's going to be very curious because there's so many franchises vying for eyeballs and so much content being thrown to just extend these franchises into infinity that it's going to be like a clash of all these titans, and it's just going to be interesting to see which ones, you know, work and which ones just fall by the wayside.
I think Star Trek benefits very much from just the size of its content library and the very fact that it is a very unique jewel. You and I, we had a great podcast episode with regards to us honoring the 50th anniversary, and we really got down to what makes Star Trek special. There is literally no franchise out there that is comparable to it in a variety of ways. I'm not saying it is the most profitable franchise in the world, but there's something genuinely unique about what it produces. And I think if they can tap into that with younger generations and just get them into the older series a little bit later on in life, I think that's going to be great. For me, though, I mean, I discovered Star Trek about age 8, this next gen era, you know, so there's potential for like these kids to watch it at like 6, 7 and just be curious for even more content and discover the live action stuff. I would not recommend Discovery for any child out there.
No.
Speaking of which, so Cam, on the Space Channel, they kept giving us like the parental warning.
Yeah, and that was weird.
It kept promising nudity in this one, and we're convinced, like, are we going to have to like see another one of those like Ash, Tyler, Laurel scenes that like keep coming back again and again
in the flashbacks.
And it was Valentine's Day. Yeah. I should say we are recording this on Valentine's Day. And can I just give a shout out to my girlfriend, who she asked me Thursday, Cam's coming over to do the podcast, right? I'm like, yeah. On Valentine's Day, huh? And I was just like, yeah.
I was oblivious. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how accommodating she's always been towards the podcast. So, Helen, I love you. Thank you so much. You've been enduring this for almost 5 years at this point. Yeah, so many other things. Thank you, Helen. Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day. So, anyways, Valentine's Day episode. No nudity that I saw, but you know what? We did miss the last, you know, 6 minutes
or
so. It
was every character was nude for the last, like, 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, it was mostly just Saru. We got about half nudity last week.
Altogether, one other thing actually I want to say just about this episode before we sign off.
Okay.
It was really, really weird not to have Tig Notaro in this episode.
After she was so prominent in the previous one, yes.
Yeah, with the whole Tilly disappearing into the biological pod thing, this character just vanishes in the following episode?
Yeah.
Very weird.
The one thing I do appreciate, though, is that Arian was featured in kind of the montage working with Stamets, and I think people think she's like one of the coolest kind of background players ever. She's also the Spore Drive operator, so it makes a lot of sense that she'd be working with Stamets in this situation, but... She really didn't, again, she didn't have that much to do, but I still like the fact that they are continuing to integrate her and they do remember what her role is on the ship.
I wonder if that character may have taken a more prominent role, maybe just a little more. I don't think she was ever going to be the star of the show or anything, but if they hadn't have recast it.
It's tough to say.
Yeah.
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 So.
I guess we'll never know until they write the book on the creation of Discovery, which will be fascinating, like a decade down the road if they have like a, you know, everyone contributing all the voices behind the scenes describing what was going on in seasons 1 and 2. It's going to be fascinating, I think.
I can't wait to hear from our now departed showrunners.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're getting to that point where we are going to cross over. So it's going to be interesting to see if the show feels different in the coming weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, going off of Saints of Imperfection, I don't mind if it feels a little different in the coming weeks.
Sure.
Okay.
Is that an unfortunate title for
that is a... Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. That's... I never even thought of that. Okay. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Next week's episode is called Crash and Burn.
No, Crash and Burn 'em.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, this is Tyler Orton beaming in after catching the last 10 minutes of Saints of Imperfection. I can say that my feelings on the episode really haven't changed now that I've seen the entire thing, but I want to highlight the Section 31 issue that I'm having right now. It's not the fact that, you know, they're now announcing that they are these secret agents, which I think is kind of silly. It's the fact that when we met them on Deep Space Nine, they were depicted as a almost rogue organization that was ultimately misguided here. But in Star Trek Discovery, they're being depicted as a legit intel arm for Starfleet, the ones that are willing to get their hands dirty to accomplish the goals of the Federation. But the thing is there are these principles behind Star Trek where humanity doesn't need to have these sorts of get-your-hands-dirty sort of groups. We've evolved beyond that as humanity, and that's why I think Section 31 was actually interesting on Deep Space Nine, is because it was showing how wayward humans can still kind of poison the well. But right now, what we're trying to see here is that Discovery is making the argument that we need Section 31 to make this universe, you know, great for everybody else. And I just don't think that was the intention of Star Trek moving forward. Humanity is supposed to evolve beyond these kinds of things. And I think that's why I'm having some issues right now. Oh, one last thing, that Michael Burnham soliloquy, you know, that she gave at the end, that monologue. I don't know. For me, it just doesn't work. And I think Star Trek Discovery is not at its best when it's taking itself super, super seriously. Okay, I'm going to beam out now and we'll be back to review the next episode coming up.
Hey, Cam here, chiming in with my thoughts on the last few minutes that we were robbed of in our initial viewing. I can't say that these extra few minutes changed what I thought of the episode, but I am kind of digging what they're setting up with Pike and Leland and Section 31 by extension. I like the idea of two groups with different philosophical codes having to work together on a common mission. It's very Star Trek. It's about overcoming differences. I'm, of course, a little baffled about the Section 31 representation we're seeing, but I'm also pretty confident that by the end of Discovery, it's going to make more sense. It's just we have to accept that at this point in time, that it feels a little weird. But, you know, I'm excited to see Cornwell there, and I really enjoyed this moment where Leland gets in trouble and then, like, chases after Cornwell, like, Admiral! It reminded me so much of that episode of Friends where Joey goes to work in the department store and then has, like, a perfume off with this cowboy in black. And the cowboy in black accidentally sprays the boss in the face and then, like, melts down. And he's like, I'm sorry, mister, or whatever his name was. That moment just totally sprang to mind when I saw the quote-unquote badass Section 31 guy chasing after Cornwell trying to justify himself. But I am looking forward to more from that character. And I'm hoping we can see him and Pike actually, like, you know, have this dueling conflict about their different philosophies. That would be so great to see. And I hope it's not just like fitting into like 2-minute chunks in random episodes. I'd like to see it played out a little more, just like I want to see more of Burnham and Georgiou together. I just think of those great old Star Trek episodes where characters are in a shuttle pod for the entire episode. That's what I want, damn it. I want it to slow down and be, you know, aimed more at old people like me. Other than that, I'm a little curious as to why Discovery has these 2-minute long Burnham voiceovers at the end. Not because there's anything inherently wrong with that, but more like the whole episode is on rails the whole time, just racing from plot point to plot point. You could use those 2 minutes just to give a little more breathing room, but anyways. Other than that, not too much more to add. Other than I look forward to the episode in the future where we find out how the biological transporter gives a haircut and a shave. Okay, I guess back to your regularly scheduled episode.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll have a video up there and, of course, discussion about this week's episode. I want to hear some hot takes on this one because I feel like there's some people out there who maybe will really, really disagree with us or, you know, even agree with us. Who knows? But I feel like this episode's not going to leave anyone feeling like, meh.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, let us know. Okay, so we'll be back, of course, with episode 6 of Discovery next week for the second season.
Crash and Burnham.
Yeah, Crash and Burnham. And you can find us on the Twitter. I'm Cam, V as in Valentine's Day Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-O as in Organic Transporter Cocoon, N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.